This is Jared Bush from the Green Bay Packers, and you're watching Cheesehead TV.
Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're taking a look back at that incredible 23-point comeback victory against the Dallas Cowboys. Then we're looking ahead to the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Packers still being alive for a spot in the playoffs. To talk about all that, discuss the Pack, we have joining us, as he does every Wednesday on the show, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing this holiday season?
Good morning. I'm doing well. A little worried that I just have one more week to finish off my Christmas shopping, but outside of that, everything's going fine.
Well, that's good. Hopefully you find some deals in the next few days as you try to finish that up. But let's talk some Pack here. I know our readers here at Cheesehead TV was surprised to hear that David Bakhtiari was the lowest rated player on the Packers offense from ProFootballFocus.com after he handled DeMarcus Ware rather well this past Sunday. And I know it's mostly due to David Bakhtiari's run blocking, but I wanted to let you go a little more in depth with this analysis and kind of shed some light into why David Bakhtiari maybe graded out a little lower than maybe people expected.
Sure. As you said, a lot of it had to do with his play in the run game. In his pass protection, he did very well. It was probably one of his best one or two games of the year, especially when you consider who the opponent was. So in pass protection, he did a fine job. But the big reasons for his low grade were, one, his false start penalty, and then, two, the play at 4:35 in the third quarter, where he basically let Everett Brown right by him for him to make a five-yard loss in the run game. So that those two plays had a big effect on his overall grade. Outside of that, there were just a couple more plays in the run game where the man that he was attempting to block got the best of him, and that didn't always lead to the defender making the tackle, but it led to the running back needing to change what direction he was going in, and ultimately affected the play, even though it wasn't the defender who ultimately made the play. So as usual for Bakhtiari, it was a fine day for him in pass protection. His run blocking really hasn't been doing that well recently.
The guy David Bakhtiari was protecting, quarterback Matt Flynn. What happened to Matt Flynn? What flip did he switch? You can break it down here for us, Nathan. You know, what happened the second half that didn't happen in the first half for Matt Flynn?
Yeah, it was basically night and day for him. He had more bad throws than good ones in the first half, including being topped off by the interception to Sterling Moore. But the second half was a lot better, a ton of great throws with a few bad ones. One thing that I think affected that a lot is the offensive line, which it has a lot for Matt Flynn, since he's been really good when he's not under pressure and really bad when he is under pressure. And in the first half, he was under pressure on 5 of 20 passes, which included the two times that he was sacked, and both of those were drive killers. Where in the second half, he was only under pressure on 2 of his 25 dropbacks, so that's an extremely low rate. So the offensive line really helped him out a lot there. And when he's not under pressure, he's been as good as any quarterback almost, where it's just when he is under pressure, he's taking sacks at a rate that basically no other quarterback in the league takes sacks as often as Matt Flynn does when he's under pressure.
Once again, I think we saw Eddie Lacy have another good game, been happening several times this season. Can you tell me a little bit about Eddie Lacy, and is he getting into Pro Bowl territory in this just his rookie year?
Yeah, basically every running back who's played Dallas this year has had a good game against them, but Lacy had especially better than good game with 6.7 yards per carry is always great. And then he had another four players miss tackles on him, so I think he's been in the Pro Bowl discussion for some weeks now. If I had to fill out my Pro Bowl ballot, I'd probably go with something like LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson, Marshawn Lynch, DeMarco Murray, Jamal Charles, and Eddie Lacy. So since it would be a lot harder after Pro Bowl was conference like it's typically been, since more of the good backs have been in the NFC this year, but since it's unconference, I think that really helps Lacy's chances.
That's a good point that I didn't really think about, that it's no longer by conference anymore. So in a deep group of NFC backs, Eddie Lacy does have a better chance this year. That's definitely interesting in saying I forgot. I mean, I knew it, but I kind of forgot about that. I thought the Packers wide receivers had a good day as a group this past Sunday against the Cowboys. But could you kind of go through them a little bit individually and tell me maybe who played the best out of that group?
I think Jared Boykin had the best day of the three wide receivers. He caught all six passes thrown his way for 83 yards. Half of those came against the Cowboys' number one cornerback, Brandon Carr. And four of those six passes went for first downs with two players missing tackles on him, on his catches. So Boykin basically did everything that he could have possibly done on those plays. Jordy Nelson had a decent game, catching five passes, including the touchdown, and two of those were first downs, but he did drop a pass, which Nelson hasn't done too much this year. And then James Jones had about equally good game as Nelson, didn't drop a pass, but only caught three passes. So no one had a bad game, and I think Boykin shined the most out of the group this week.
We'll see if Randall Cobb joins them this upcoming week as he tries to make a comeback from an injury earlier in the season. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Let's take a look at the defensive side of the football. Nathan, I know Clay Matthews was criticized for being handled by Tyron Smith for most of the day this past week. But he did come up with those two big second half plays. How would you say Matthews did in this game?
I would say it was a below average game for Matthews. He was getting a little bit of pressure throughout the game, but a lot of it came really late into the play. Typically, you'd like to see a defender get pressure on the quarterback a lot earlier. He ended up with 1 sack and four hurries, but when you consider it was on 46 pass rushes, that's not all that great. And a lot of his pressure that he did get either came up against the tight end or came unblocked. So even when he did have a good play, it typically wasn't against Tyron Smith. And then in the run game, Matthews typically does a decent job, but he didn't really make any plays in the run game in this one. And then there were a few times where a tight end got the best of blocking him. So it was also a below average game for him in the run game.
The Packers didn't get much pass rush in the first half, but it did seem like they did in the second half. Now, apart from Clay Matthews, who you just kind of broke down, where did the pass rush come from?
The Packers did get more pressure in the second half. They were actually doing an okay job getting pressure in the first half, too. They were getting pressure at 30% of the Cowboys' passes in the first half, and then that was up to 50% in the second half, which 50% is around as good as it gets for how often a quarterback gets pressure in terms of how good the defense is playing. The two most notable players were Mike Daniels and Mike Neal. Daniels had a sack and three hurries. Mike Neal had a sack and four hurries. So those two players were probably the best of the group. And then Dayton Jones, who had much fewer pass rushes, had a sack and one hurry. So when you account for the number of pass rushes, Jones also had a decent game. And then a lot of the Packers defenders had one or two hurries each. The only two players who were below average in pass rushing in this game were Ryan Pickett, which isn't surprising since he's definitely a run-stuffing defender and not so much a pass rusher. And then A.J. Hawk, who rushed the passer 9 times but didn't end up getting any pressure.
Now, as far as, you know, the pass rush goes, you know, the Packers trying to put pressure on the quarterback, so they kind of hurry the pass, and, and kind of the beneficiary of the Cowboys passing attack was Dez Bryant, who had a big day. But who did those yards come mostly against? Who was covering Dez Bryant as he got, I think it was in excess of 150 yards this past week?
Yeah, it was a 153-yard performance on 11 catches for Bryant. And it basically all came against Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, and Morgan Burnett. There was a player, too, that Bryant caught a pass outside of those players, but each of those three caught 67 to 80. Each of those three allowed 67 to 86 yards to Dez Bryant. And the Packers basically kept Shields on the right side and Williams on the left side. And then Bryant very rarely lined up in the slot, so it was always either Williams or Shields who started up lining up against Bryant. And then sometimes it was Bryant got deep enough that it was Morgan Burnett's responsibility at that point.
So it kind of leads me into this next question here. What was this a case of just, you know, one big play from Sam Shields and Tremont Williams, they, both of them coming up with interceptions? Or, you know, did they have good days all around? I mean, how do you grade players like that?
Sure. I would say Sam Shields had a very good day in this game. He allowed just four catches throughout the game. Three of them came to Dez Bryant, which weren't good plays for Shields, but the fourth catch was just a one-yard play to Terrence Williams. And when you can hold a wide receiver to just a one-yard play, that's a good play for the defensive back, even though it was a catch allowed. And then outside of that, in the fourth quarter, he had two passes defended and his interception. So typically you see cornerbacks allow more bad plays than they have good plays, but Shields had four good plays compared to just three bad ones. So anytime you make more good plays than bad ones as a cornerback, it's a very good thing. So I think Shields had a great game. Where Tremont Williams, on the other hand, it wasn't his best game. He allowed 7 of 9 passes thrown his way to be caught, 5 of those ones for first downs, and then the other two came on early downs, which brought the Cowboys closer to a first down. And then out of the two incompletions, one was due to a Romo overthrow rather than Williams making a good play in coverage. He also had a missed tackle and an early penalty. So really his interception was his only redeeming play of the game, where he had a lot of bad plays throughout.
But what a big play it was. I think most people will give Tremont Williams a pass just for making that one play on the day. Give me a preview of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Nathan. How much has this team changed since the Packers last saw them in Super Bowl XLV?
Sure. Their offense really hasn't changed that much. Ben Roethlisberger is still a good quarterback. One of their strengths is still at wide receiver, even though they don't have Mike Wallace anymore. Their other three wide receivers have stepped up this year. Heath Miller is still at tight end. Running back Le'Veon Bell is a little bit of an upgrade to what they had back then, and their offensive line is a little better as well. So I think the Packers will do a little bit better job stopping the run than they have been against other teams this season. But Antonio Brown at wide receiver could give the cornerback some problems. Their defense, on the other hand, looks a lot different, especially at linebacker. Lawrence Timmons isn't playing nearly as well as he was back then, and they're switching between some younger linebackers who haven't made much of an impact at the other inside linebacker spot. Jason Worlds is doing a decent job at left outside linebacker, so Don Barclay will probably have one of the biggest tests on the Packers' offense. But on the other side, other first-round pick Jarvis Jones really hasn't made much of an impact this season. And then in their defensive backs, Troy Polamalu is, even at his age, still one of the better safeties in the league. But then Ike Taylor, who gets a lot of recognition in the Steelers' defense, he's having a terrible this year. So I can see the Packers' wide receivers really getting the best of Ike Taylor. And overall, with the Steelers' defense, during that Super Bowl year, they were great at run defense, pass rush, and coverage. And this year, they're only average at stopping the run and then below average at pass rush and coverage. So, again, it could be another high-scoring game that the Packers are in this week.
Well, some familiar faces, some new pieces in Pittsburgh. I'm excited to check it out. Nathan, we'll give you the Christmas holiday off next week, so we won't talk to you for 2 weeks. Have a very happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Happy holidays to all of you, and I will talk to you again in 2014.
All right. Sounds good. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday here on the show, except next Wednesday, of course. No show next Wednesday. It is Christmas Day the 25th, so we won't be talking to Nathan then. But we're going to continue to talk Packers for the rest of this episode, actually. And it was interesting, I thought, to get Nathan's thoughts on Clay Matthews, which is kind of the title of today's show, Clay Matthews, Jekyll and Hyde. He's kind of been a little bit of up and down, kind of you're not sure what you're going to get ever since coming back from that broken thumb. And I do think that has a big part of it. It's, you know, obviously, you know, still one of the most impactful players on the game. You saw when he knifed into the backfield there, on that interception from Sam Shields, Clay Matthews basically forcing a hurried throw from Tony Romo. He really got to the quarterback there almost instantaneously. You just see that burst and know he still got it. But you kind of know that broken thumb has kind of impacted him, and he's getting handled. He got handled by Tyron Smith, as Nathan said. He even got handled by a tight end now and then. So, you know, kind of disappointing from that aspect for Clay Matthews, a guy you hope does more, a guy the Packers really need to do more on a more consistent basis. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it a case of, if you go back and you remember that first game after he came back from the injury, he wore the club cast that game in which his whole hand was inside a cast, and that was his worst game of his of the year, maybe his career. But it has been better since that time. You know, they freed up his the rest of his fingers with the, you know, except the thumb, which is still immobilized. And he has, you know, done better since that time. So I don't, is this a case of we're seeing him do better, and he's not going to be the same until that cast fully comes off? I'm not sure. But we are kind of seeing, like I said, a Jekyll and Hyde Clay Matthews kind of right now, which the Packers could certainly use a more healthy Clay Matthews. I think, you know, part of the reason the defense has played as well as it has the past, oh, let's say 2 months, basically ever since Aaron Rodgers was injured, month and a half maybe, you know, I think part of the reason there is, you know, they were lost for a period, kind of Clay Matthews and Nick Perry at the same time, or even when they were back, you know, they're not fully healthy. You're not seeing a fully healthy Nick Perry. And, you know, I think that's been, you know, really detrimental to this Packers defense, because you're almost seeing Mike Neal is kind of taking more snaps than Perry right now. And I'm not sure if that's in the best interest of the defense if everybody's healthy. Obviously, Mike Neal's been healthy enough, and he's been doing a creditable job this year. I'm not sure exactly how to, you know, quantify Mike Neal's contributions to this team. I do know he's had sacks in 4 out of the past 5 games. That's really good. He has been doing pretty good job at getting a pass rush. I've said this before, Mike Neal kind of, you know, plays in a phone booth. And once he gets out in space, he's not that good. But if he can just pin his ears back and rush the passer, he does do a good job. And I shared this on social media yesterday. I'm not sure why Andy Malumba is playing on defense at all ahead of Clay Matthews, Nick Perry and Mike Neal. He hasn't been playing much, but I know Andy Mulumba, I think, got 8 snaps this past week. Well, that's 8 more than I think he should be having. And that's nothing against Andy Mulumba. He's an undrafted rookie. I just don't think he does a good job, anywhere as close to a good job as Matthews, Perry, or Neal yet. And not to say the Packers should cut him. I'm not saying that. He's doing fine, and he's better than the other rookie outside linebacker, Nate Palmer. And certainly I have no problem with Andy Mulumba playing if there's an injury, but I don't think he should really be playing at all as long as those guys are healthy and can be on the field. So and hopefully they're only getting more healthy. The further away Clay Matthews is from his injury, his broken thumb, I think the better he's going to get. Same with Nick Perry and his, you know, he had the broken foot earlier in the season, kind of had a sprained ankle to compound the problems. Mike Neal's been dealing with an abdomen issue for, I don't know, about half the year. You know, all these guys are kind of dealing with these lingering issues, but it has been a while now. I hope they're on the mend, and I hope that means better things for the Packers defense to come. We sit here on a Wednesday, and you know, I think there's a lot of attention on the two big offensive playmakers for the Packers today, as they get ready for their first day of on-field preparations for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tuesday's their weekly day off, at, you know, typically, as long as they're playing on a Sunday and not Monday Night Football or anything like that, or, you know, the atypical Thursday game or whatever. You know, we're kind of waiting to hear on what's going to happen to two big names today, namely Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb. They're both going to go pre-practice evaluations. I don't know exactly what all that entails, meeting with either the training staff, whether it means actually meeting with the team doctors, Pat McKenzie, a combination of the training and the doctors, or what have you, strength and conditioning staff involved, maybe, I don't know. But they are going to undergo evaluation, and they're going to kind of set a plan this week for, you know, what's going to happen with these players. You know, I think Aaron Rodgers is closer to playing than Randall Cobb. I could be wrong. We'll find out more. But, I mean, obviously, you know, everybody is kind of waiting on this, and especially Aaron Rodgers. You know, we went through a long, drawn-out ordeal last week of will he or won't he play. He practiced last week. He took some reps with the first-string offense, but ended up not playing. As you found out on Sunday during the broadcast, I think it was Troy Aikman, that you know, kind of let the cat out of the bag. I mean, they found out during an interview, Aaron Rodgers said he thought he was going to be the starter as late as like Thursday last week, and you know, didn't end up being the case, obviously. But I mean, now, you know, so many days later, Aaron Rodgers has had more time to heal yet, more time to rest. Is it finally the time that he's going to practice and play? And we'll find out today a lot more. It could go a lot of ways. It could be kind of the status quo it has been for about the past 2 weeks, in which, yes, he practices on a limited basis, but they still kind of, you know, going to let Matt Flynn take the starter's reps. Or is it going to be finally cleared and he starts practicing and he's the man? I don't really know. I don't know what to say. We'll find out later today as far as Aaron Rodgers go. And then for Randall Cobb, you know, like I said, I don't feel quite as positive about him. But, I mean, things have been trending upward lately. I remember, you know, 2 weeks ago, he wasn't even, you know, cleared to run. Last week, he was finally cleared to run, but he didn't practice. And now the word is this week, Randall Cobb, like Aaron Rodgers, is going to undergo evaluation, which could determine whether or not he'll play. And again, could be in the exact same boat where maybe he practices, but they're not really ready to clear him yet. You know, it's just so hard to say. I'm just kind of, you know, grasping at straws here, trying to look into the crystal ball that's kind of hazy right now. And until practice actually comes, it's just guesswork. It's just guesswork. So the good news is here at, as I look at my clock, 8:55 a.m. Central Time on a Wednesday morning, we're just a few short hours away from knowing what's going to actually happen with these guys. Practice starts, you know, usually somewhere in the realm of 11 o'clock a.m., you know, Lambeau time. And we'll find out then as we kind of get, you know, the practice reports from the beat reporters start to file in. And then after that, Mike McCarthy kind of talks and meets with the media and maybe gives a couple hints, although he's not exactly forthcoming in what he says to the media. Kind of combine that with the injury report. The Packers will say whether, you know, the Packers, the players practiced in a limited fashion or full, or whether they didn't practice at all. You know, kind of add all those things up and we kind of get a better picture. But I mean, you know, what a better time would the Packers, you know, what timing would it be? It wouldn't be better if these, you know, elite players return. I mean, we're talking arguably the two best players on the entire roster, Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb. I mean, they're in. I think we can say Aaron Rodgers is number one. I don't know where you rank Randall Cobb on the team, but he's probably in everybody's ranking somewhere in the top five at least, and he's probably even higher than that for some. So I mean, getting these two back would certainly be a boost, and I mean, everything's now on the line. Of course, you know, after the Monday night football game, Lions lose, and what a game. I mean, this has been our first Real Bird Central episode since that game happened. Justin Tucker kicks the 61-yard field goal with just the, what, 30-some-odd seconds remaining in the game to push the Lions downward in the pecking order in the NFC North. Packers now control their own destiny. You know, and there's lots of scenarios that still have to play out. Technically, you know, the Packers could lose this week and still make the playoffs, but a lot would have to happen. I think the Lions would have to lose twice, and the Bears would have to lose twice. They'd have to lose this week and next week to the Packers. You know, so it's all complicated, all these scenarios yet, but I mean, basically what it boils down to, the simplest terms, I mean, if the Packers win out, win their last two games, they take care of the Pittsburgh Steelers this week, they take care of the Chicago Bears next week, they're in. We know that. So, you know, that's the simplest terms and the easiest path, perhaps, to the playoffs for the Packers. Then they don't have to worry about other teams helping them out and losing for them, basically. So Packers, you know, it starts this week against the Steelers. And I guess you could kind of say if the Packers beat the Steelers this week, then it comes down to the all-important showdown against the Bears next week. It really almost, it doesn't matter what the Bears do this week against the Eagles. You know, they could win, they could lose. It's still going to come down to the finale, the regular season finale at Chicago in the final week of the season. You know, interesting times here for the Packers. You know, rather amazing. They go on that five-game winless streak, but yet they're still alive. And hey, they're on a two-game winning streak now. They could potentially end the season, the regular season, with a four-game winning streak. And hey, you get hot to end the regular season, and all of a sudden you get Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb back. Things are looking quite a bit different then. But let's not put the cart ahead of the horse. Packers still have two games to go here, but it would certainly, be beneficial if they could see the return of two of the best players on the team and help them out in that regard. I don't want to make a prediction for the game yet. I kind of want to see how things happen, how things play out this week, where Randall Cobb is at, where Aaron Rodgers is at, if these guys are healthy and ready to go. I don't get the feeling that Randall Cobb's going to be ready this week, maybe next week, maybe the playoffs. But like I said, he's trending upward, but I do feel better about Aaron Rodgers. But again, no guarantees. The doctors have to clear him, and it's kind of an organizational decision. I think a lot of people are confused about what happens, about being cleared and all that. And I think what it is, it's like the doctor's recommendation. I think Dr. Pat McKenzie last week tells Mike McCarthy, tells whoever, Ted Thompson, if he's involved in the decision-making process. I'm not sure how much he is, but he might be with such a large-scale decision. I think Dr. McKenzie recommends Aaron Rodgers doesn't play. And then based upon that, the organization kind of determines the risk-reward scenario and saying, there is still potential for re-injury here. We don't want to have Aaron Rodgers set back even further. We want him to be available for the playoffs if it comes down to that. And I think a decision is made from the organization, which Mike McCarthy, it comes, the final decision comes down to him that Aaron Rodgers shouldn't play. And I think it's, rather rare when they would go against the recommendation of the doctor. But who knows? Maybe things now change this week with the extra time Aaron Rodgers has had. And that's kind of how I see it playing out this week. But we'll find out more today. And that'll do it on a Wednesday for Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV. This will be the last episode of Railbird Central, I think, until December 27th, actually until next Friday. I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to be doing a lot of traveling during the holidays, going to be away from home, going to be away from the home studio where I record Railbird Central, and that's kind of the biggest factor. So I won't be away entirely. You might see a little less posting at Cheesehead TV, but I'll still be around, still be writing articles. And if you're really hard up for podcasts, I will still be doing my, bi-weekly interviews with K107 and Fond du Lac, and I'll try to post those as best I can as when I'm away from home. But I really do hope all my listeners out there have happy holidays. I wish you all the best, and thank you so much for listening to the show and reading Cheesehead TV and all those things. So thanks a lot, folks. We'll talk to you later when we come back from holiday break, basically. So have a happy holidays. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kiravu. We'll see you later, everyone. I leave you today with a song called Tinderbox by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go. The dawn of